really is an American dream.
Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to be taking a more in-depth look at problems and solutions for the migrants coming to the United States. Right now, it's been very politicized by both sides. And what's forgotten in all this are the real reasons people are coming, and those that are legitimate and those that are not. We have Todd Miller today, an investigative journalist and author who has been researching immigration and border issues on the U.S.-Mexican border for over 15 years. He's worked with organizations such as the North American Congress for Latin America, where he's an editor of his publication, Border Wars. He has published in the New York Times, Mother Jones, The Nation, Al Jazeera, Tom's Dispatch. His recent book won this year's Izzy Award for Journalistic Excellence, Storming the Wall, Climate Change, Migration, and Homeland Security. So we're going to have a talk with him about climate change and migration and homeland security, what we're not seeing that we should, that could change and alter our perspective. Also today, I want to play you what I didn't have a chance yesterday, The Real Reasons for Good People Failing by Robin Sharma. And part of, but not all of, John Perkins' new discussion as an economic hitman, confessing, but also what he never told us before. It's an extraordinarily interesting piece. So we're going to get some of that in. I don't know if I'll have time for some commentaries, but if we do, John Whitehead from Op-Ed News on, you have the right to talk back to the government, but it could get you killed. And 11 companies that control everything you buy from the natural blaze. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. And of course, we always begin by the latest on health and healing. First up, from the University of Indonesia, a new study shows that black cumin, C-U-M-I-N, seeds have healing powers for asthma. It's an ancient natural healing remedy. It's used all over the Middle East and also in India. And I consider it nothing less than a phenomenal healing potential. I've seen so many people who had parasites, who had local pain, and a teaspoon diluted in some other beverage, because it's very hard to take straight, taken two or three times a day can really work wonders. And here's what it says. The phrase, black seed cures everything but death. Well, there are two brand new peer-reviewed published articles on black cumin seed oil, and they can be added to the thousands that already exist. It's called Nigella, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, Sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A. And the two recent studies focus on asthma and renal, which is kidney cancer. Both were concluded with positive results. And they were published in the Biochemical Central, which is part of the British Medical Journal. So if you have asthma, now consider black cumin seed oil on a daily basis. Again, diluted. Or if you have kidney cancer, it's also just one more piece to a puzzle to help you. And it works rather quickly. I suggest the oil, not the seeds. Because depending upon a person's digestion, the seeds may or may not open before they pass through the body. What they said here was that, quote, mast cells played an important role in inflammation of airways and asthma due to their capacity to release histamine. We showed in this study that in sativa, which is black cumin seed, was effective in inhibiting of histamine release by mast cells. That's very important when you consider how many children have asthma or bronchial conditions. From the University of Nebraska, an article published in the Journal of Applied Physiology. And it's about curry and how curry boosts exercise performance, especially where there's been heart failure. Now, again, curry's good. I recommend it. But curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, that's the main ingredient in curry. And that's what you really need. 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams a day could help improve exercise. And also, if you've had heart failure, it's absolutely important. Curcumin, a chemical that comes from the turmeric plant, has been used in traditional Asian medicine for centuries, primarily to treat gastrointestinal ailments and skin wounds. And studies by the hundreds have shown that the compound can prevent or limit muscle wasting associated with a number of health conditions, including heart failure and cancer, like cachexia. It can also help if you've had heart failure. Now, heart failure affects over 6 million Americans living in the United States right now. So people with heart failure have a reduced function of the left ventricle, the chamber of the heart that pumps blood out of the rest to the rest of the body, and called reduced ejection fraction. Now, reduced ability to exercise is another significant characteristic of heart failure. And previous research has found that higher than normal levels of oxidative stress, and that you've heard me mention many times, is an imbalance of two different kinds of molecules that can result in cell damage and contribute to exercise intolerance in people with heart failure. And heart failure is also associated with lower than normal expression of antioxidant enzymes in the muscles. So researchers from the University of Nebraska Medical School looked at this and tried for the first time curcumin for 12 weeks, and it worked. So one more thing to consider. Also from Beijing Normal University, published in the Journal of Cancer, International Journal of Cancer, eating lentils, which are pulses or legumes, twice a week can reduce your risk of breast cancer by 24%. Now, I know many of you are already doing everything that's reasonable to prevent breast cancer. I know you're exercising regularly, eating a healthy plant-based diet, using a lot of organic produce, juicing, maintaining healthy weight. But how many of you are eating lentils? And so most people don't eat lentils. They do in other cultures. Italian culture does, French culture, Greek culture, and in the Middle East, we don't here. So this is not a little study. 90,000 premenopausal women studying the risk of breast cancer and flavanol intake for 8 years. So it was a big study over a long period of time, and they found that these women who ate 2 servings of lentils per week enjoyed a significantly lower risk of breast cancer than those who did not. Now, by the way, this is not the only study. There was a Norwegian study of legume intake in more than 3,500 cases of cancer discovered that high lentil intake reduced the risk of cancer of the esophagus, throat, mouth by 37%. And that was a 6-year study, and colon cancer was reduced by 47%. Now, just think of this for a moment. There are no straight lines in life. Everything is problematic day to day. Everything has to reestablish its homeostasis, emotional, spiritual, physical, environmental, relationship, societal, intellectual, creative. Homeostasis is internal balance. And just imagine that you're walking across a tightrope. And I actually did this at a retreat back in 1989 in Texas. And we had a gentleman from New York who joined us, and he said, I'd like to show you something. And we had 2 big oak trees, and they were not far apart, about 30 feet. And he said, I'm going to tie this big thick rope and it was about 3 inches thick, around each tree and get it tight. He had one of those come-alongs that pull it so it gets tight. And it was 1 inch off the ground. That's it. In fact, the grass was actually higher than the rope. He said, now I'm going to do the same identical thing and put it 5 feet off the ground. And so we asked people, would they like to try? And people walked across the rope, and nobody actually lost their balance. And he explained how you maintain your balance. Keep your point of eye contact straight ahead, and keep your arms out at the same level at the shoulder, and just relax and breathe, and feel the rope with your feet. They did it barefooted, and no one fell off. When he tried it at 5 feet, and we had people there supporting on either side, so nobody was going to fall and hit the ground, but only half the people tried it, and of those people who tried it, every single one lost their balance. So the question is this: why are we willing to try things when there is little consequence to being wrong? And why is it that those things that require risk also create automatically fear? Because it was fear, and with fear comes a restriction in our balance. You lose your emotional balance when you're afraid or angry. Think of the people saying things and what they say, the words they choose, the tone they choose when they're angry. Those are not complimentary. Those are not ones that bring us closer together. There was someone that used to send me these emails, and they were always negative, always a put down. And so I blocked the person because they weren't open to any dialogue. And I get a lot of these kind of weirdos. And what I did is I did a whole movie on this, because I use life experiences to do documentaries that can help other people. And here's what was interesting. All of the things that people would say in order to insinuate themselves into your life, meaning with that person in your life, somehow your life is better, you're saved, you're going to be wiser. But without that person, you're just a failure. How many times does that happen? Where people, instead of looking at the best you are and allowing you an opportunity to feel good about your choices, they're always putting you down, always finding something to be critical of. Might be a parent, a sibling, a teacher, someone in your life, a social person. Well, how do you feel when someone puts you down? You don't feel good. That creates a sense of incompleteness of self, and then we begin to question whether or not we are that person, and that leads to depression, or that we'll never succeed because, well, we're a failure, in which case we feel acute anxiety to try anything. Find someone who suffers from anxiety and ask them, when was the last time you did anything? And the answer is not. I even helped someone get their doctorate. They had been stuck for 6 years on their thesis in developmental psychology, and they gave every excuse for not finishing it. And so I helped this person do some mental exercises to get comfortable with who they are, and they finished it in 2 months and passed it and is now a full professor at a major university. And hopefully passing on that message, fear constricts, fear limits, fear creates an imbalance at the emotional, intellectual, and creative and humanistic levels. It begins to give more power to the negative than the positive. Remember what I've suggested many times, that we only allow one energy at a time into our lives. Now, that can change, but when a dominant energy is negative, all other potential positive energies are collapsed under it. Until you reverse that. Can you? Yes, you can. And I've seen it so many times reversed. So when this person was asking everyone that night around the campfire, what would happen if you reversed it and you have confidence in yourself and focused and you were relaxed, and then at the end of the week, this Choctaw Indian came over. His name was Daryl and his wife, and they would always do the, if many of you, thousands of you came over the years, You remember Daryl? He was a wonderful, wonderful, wise person, and he did the talking sticks. So that week, after people were releasing their fears, the next morning, we went back and redid it. Everybody wanted to do the 5-foot level. Only one person lost their balance. Everyone else went right across it and felt great and realized they had purged that part of fear. Now, there are reasonable risks to take in life, and we should. And there are unreasonable risks to take, and we shouldn't. The fact that we have an opportunity to do something doesn't mean we should, if it's not something that will help us grow and better define our authentic self. If we stay in const, like a conch in a shell, or a clam, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to exist. And I believe life is far too vital than just existing. Look for the reasonable and responsible challenges that allow us to use our homeostasis. And so when we're looking at this, and I was decided to do a lecture, a person who wanted to try something, I gave him a chance. I said, go ahead and edit this. It's all finished. All the filming is done. Well, they were very adventurous. They loved two topics. And could they do two at the same time? Can you handle that? Yeah, I can handle it. 3 months later, and this was not inexpensive, person was earning a substantial salary for doing this, I get a call one day. And the call was, Gary, these are the wrong projects to do. They're unsalvageable. They don't work. And sorry, but my suggestion is start over and start from scratch and just refilm them, yourself included. And I said, why do you feel that you can't edit them? Because they're just not editable. Okay. So that was it. The person left the project. And I then ask Richard Polonesky, by the way, one of the most singularly brilliant, creative producer-editors I've ever had the privilege of meeting. I hired him away from The View, and he spent, I'm guessing, about 10 years with us. Every single thing he did was an award-winning film in the post-production. And just a vibrant, dynamic, creative guy. And so I said, Richard, would you take a look at these, and do you believe that these are unsalvageable, that we have to start over? And he looked at him, he called me back, says, no, Gary. No, there's more good information here. It's just that this person didn't know how to put them together. They were limited, and this person never told us about their limitations. And so I said, well, go ahead and see what you can do. And in 1 month, I was out on the road, I received two films. And I watched them, and they were phenomenal. In fact, they had multi-awards that were given to them, and they've helped tremendously people. One was Overcoming the Dark Side, and the other was Happiness. So here's the lesson. Here's the takeaway message today, because I like to use real situations for helping people who are out there who may be stuck. The problem was not that we didn't have the right footage. We did. We interviewed some of the smartest men and women on the planet about why we get stuck and why we make negative choices and why we keep putting our energy in the wrong places. But the person who had asked for the responsibility to do these projects was limiting what she did based upon her own life limitations. And later, I put the two films in the room upstairs in one of our production rooms, side by side. Here's what you did. Here's what Richard did. Same identical material. Nothing new was added. Watch them. It was like Libya before the invasion and Libya after the invasion. And the person began for the first time to see that you're always going to be limited in what ever you do in any project, work, or relationship, or friendship, even parenting, based upon what you have not resolved yourself. We are always tethered to our weakest, most incomplete point, the thing we hide, disguise, we deny. We stuff it somewhere deep within the recesses of a closet and keep it locked. But then the door was open. So then the person began to realize, in a more in-depth discussion that we had, and this is, you don't know who she is, but this is what she said to me. She says, Gary, I just pissed away 30 years of my life. Wow. And I said, what do you mean? She says, all the choices I've made in the last 30 years have been wrong choices. I played it safe. I played the system. And this shows me what I'm not able to do because I didn't master my fears. So how can I work on a film that tells people how to work on their fears when I haven't worked on my own fears? Overcoming negativity when I haven't overcome my own negativity. Help people evolve into authentic self when I have not evolved into my authentic self. Now, the reason why, and that's for this person and their therapist to work out. But how often in life have we not done something, not because we couldn't do it or didn't want to do it, but our limitations of self prevented it? And that's frequent. And we see it all the time. So hopefully that's a part of a lesson for all of us. And finally, caffeinated beverages during pregnancy is linked to low birth weight babies, and that's dangerous. This is from the University College Dublin, Ireland, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So when you're drinking any caffeinated beverage, it could be a soft drink or it could be coffee or tea, you're adversely affecting that developing fetus. Don't have anything in the way of caffeine when you are pregnant because low birth babies are more likely to die and it's constricting and restricting the blood flow into the placenta. Norwegian University of Science and Technology says that the older we get, the more exercise we should be doing. Get off your butt. Exercise and physical activity are not just good for you, but are actually able to help reverse the aging process, lengthening the telomeres, enhancing telomerase, the enzyme necessary to keep our chromosomes healthy and hence our body alive. This was done at the Cardiac Exercise Research Group at Norwegian University of Science and Technology. And there were 70,000 people involved in their study over a period of years, so it's a really good study. And they suggest build more walking trails, walk more, power walk more. I agree. Let's do some dancing, walking, walking fast, skiing, rollerblading, roller skating, swimming. But let's keep active. I'm Gary Nall. We are 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back, and we're going to come right back in to this why people fail. It's a short clip. It's The Real Reasons Good People Fail by Robin Sharma, S-H-A-R-M-A. I haven't heard him before, but I like what he had to say, and I just wanted to share it with you.
Martin Luther King Jr. said it so well. He said, until you have found something you're willing to die for, you're not fit to live. Now, if you were to look at Nelson Mandela, he suffered more than most people. If you look at any great artist, they all outsuffered the majority. So what I wanted to do is walk you through five of the primary reasons good people who could really own their crafts and lift the world don't do it. And the first thing is, fears are larger than their faith. Good people often become seduced by the chatter of their loudest fears. We are good in our comfort zones, but the moment we start to go blue ocean around our next level, our fears come up. And the true heroes and the true titans and the true masters, those people are not fearless. Those are people who have just practiced walking into their fear to the point where they're comfortable amid their discomfort. The second reason good people fail is this: they blame their outer conditions versus seeing it as an opportunity to grow themselves. You see, what most people do, they stumble and they fall and they become heartbroken or disappointed by life's challenges. That happens to every single one of us. But if you simply start asking yourself, how can I turn my stumbling blocks into stepping stones? How can I turn my hard times into monuments of strength of character? The whole purpose of life is to grow, to evolve, be great in your own original way. Third reason good people lose or fail is they become distracted versus being disruptors. Most leaders and producers and performers and creatives on the planet today are addicted to distraction, which is destroying their masterful production. You can go to the top 5% by simply stripping out the distraction. You've got to be willing and brave enough to spend a lot of time alone to do work that wows the world and disrupts your field. Number four, the fourth reason good people lose is simply this: they have low confidence. If you look at the great business builders, if you look at an Elon Musk, if you look at a Jeff Bezos, if you look at a Phil Knight, all of these great masters had one thing in common: acutely high levels of personal confidence. They came up with an idea for the incandescent light bulb. They came up with an idea for Amazon. They came up with an idea for Tesla. They came up with an idea for SpaceX, and everyone laughed at them. But because of the confidence they had built, they kept on going. The fifth and final reason that good people lose is simply this: they didn't stay in the game long enough. Few things are as powerful for you to win in your own unique way is staying in the game, staying with your purpose, staying with your goal longer than the world thinks it's sane for you to keep on pursuing your dream, your obsession. I don't know what that fire within your heart is, but I am here to tell you that fire is a message. That fire is your instinct. That fire is your cellular DNA telling you you have an opportunity and a responsibility to get it done. And this is where heroes are made.
Okay. What I would offer is a different point of view is that I believe that Jeff Bezos and the other people, Mark Zuckerberg, for example, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Larry Ellison, these people are the wealthiest people in the world, but they're not spiritual. They're not humanistic. Yet if you look back at Lorenzo de Medici, you would have seen that the people were humanistic, were spiritual. They sat in council with philosophers, great philosophers, who understood everything about how civilizations rose and fell, why the Roman Empire fell after hundreds of years. They understood what was the best way of using money, and therefore they made money not just for themselves, but rather for society. They built great cities. They built the Renaissance. They were responsible for it. Without them, there would have been no Renaissance. None. What good is a Michelangelo or Raphael or Titan or Leonardo da Vinci? And following them, Immanuel Kant, for example, if you do not have someone who sees the larger picture in life and sponsors all points of light towards that, nurtures it, gives it safe haven, and ushers in that sense of common advancement. And that's what was important about the Renaissance. Everyone benefited. Today, all these people have their homes behind gated walls. They have fortunes that are not being spent. If just six people, decided to use one-fifth of their money, we could end all educational debt, freeing up every student from debt peonage for the future. We could feed every single one of the 16 million hungry children each day in the United States. We could help stop the wars around the world, including the suffering in Yemen, because these people, as wealthy as they are, actually have more power than the President of the United States. He is more of a constitutional monarch in how he acts, as immature as he is. These people are not immature. They're just not spiritually evolved. But the other points of view that he said, I definitely agree with. I would just temper it with that. And before we take a little commentary here, I wanted to acknowledge that there are people within the left media who, in my personal opinion, have abrogated their responsibility to stand up against the corporate liberal community or the Democrats. And long ago, the right stopped even trying to pretend to be objective. We know what they're going to do every single time because they only seem to have one mindset, whereas the Democrats were supposed to have been the party that cared. And indeed, since FDR, they have, up through about the mid-1960s. Lyndon Johnson was probably the last one. And since that, we have the new Democrats and the new liberals that they control. This is confusing to historical Democrats and historical liberals, as is historical conservatives are concerned about what the Republicans have done to their once noble gestures. So when Amy Goodman on Democracy Now, you know, banged the drums for war and intervention in Libya and in Syria, the left never held her accountable. Okay, that's their business. But even now, there's still misinformation that she's spewing forth. I'm going to read a letter from Mitchell Cohen. Mitchell is a Marxist. He cares deeply about our sister station, WBAI. He helps with all the volunteers that sees that all your premiums get out. And by the way, every single premium from the last fund drive from my audience has been shipped. Paid for, we paid for them, and we shipped them out. So that's a good thing. And I want to thank Bertold Reimers and Andrea Katz, but also the person that gets those to you, and he's not paid for this, is Mitchell Cohen. Here's what Mitchell wrote this week to Amy Goodman. This is no one's seen this, except maybe a few of the people he sent it to, but I did. Quote, Amy Goodman said on Democracy Now!, November 28th, 2018, Russia is sending advanced surface-to-air missiles to the Crimea Peninsula amid mounting terror tensions with Ukraine. The escalation comes after Russia's Navy captured three Ukrainian ships Sunday and arrested sailors near a narrow waterway separating Russia from Crimea, which Russia seized and illegally annexed in 2014. Okay, now I continue. This is Mitchell Cohen. Quote, but Russia did not seize the Crimea, nor did it illegally annex it. The populace of the region voted overwhelmingly to join with Russia in a free election. It was Ukraine's U.S.-installed government containing World War II Nazis that poured troops and missiles into the region, provoking war and bloodshed. Furthermore, when the Soviet Union was dissolved, a treaty granting Russia military base rights in Crimea was executed. Russian troops were stationed in Crimea for more than two decades by treaty. The majority of the population in Crimea is ethnically Russian. Russia introduced no new forces in Crimea during the crisis. The troops, as I said, were already there under the base of the basing agreement. The idea was the held in Crimea were some 96% favorable alliance with Russia. This was an entirely reasonable reaction, not solely out of ethnic loyalty, but because the legitimate elected government in Kiev had been overthrown and a puppet loyal to NATO in the United States had been installed in Ukraine, thrown into crisis. Russia, remember, had offered to supply Ukraine with financing and energy on more favorable terms than those offered by the West. However, this interdependence between Russia and Ukraine was unacceptable to the United States-led NATO. Thus, Ukraine was destabilized and pro-Western Poroshenko installed. So once again, I am objecting to Amy's characterization of Russia as seizing Crimea and illegally annexing it. That is the CIA's line. It shouldn't be ours. Please correct us on the air, Mitchell Cohen. So thank you, Mitchell, for being conscious and aware and sending that out. But it's not the first time. With the WikiLeaks 22,000 emails from the campaign director for Hillary Clinton, Podesta, John Podesta, one of those emails exposed Gloria Nuland, the most powerful family in Washington, D.C., far more powerful than Trump, and longtime neocon. I mean, her husband and their brothers and sisters and the people they select and the foundations they run and the think groups, all colonialists. These people think that the term of being an imperial asset is a positive one. It's not. And she was the head of the Russian desk at the State Department under Clinton, and it showed what she actually felt. It actually said, you know, that she was showing how the United States and Hillary Clinton and the CIA was orchestrating a coup in the Ukraine to get rid of the duly elected, constitutionally elected president and put this Poroshenko, who is utterly corrupt, in place, but one of our assets. And yet all the media, left and right, continue to make the wrong statements over and over and over again. So it's nice that someone actually stands up and tells the truth. And by the way, there's another report that goes into great depth on this, and you can read it. It's Tom Luongo, L-U-O-N-G-O, from the Strategic Culture Foundation, an article entitled, "As Time Runs Out, Poroshenko and the West Poison the Sea of Azov." I'll just read a paragraph here. "Trouble has been brewing in the Sea of Azov all year. It started with Ukraine seizing a Russian fishing boat and detaining its crew in March." By the way, that's Ukraine's fascistic government seizing a Russian fishing boat. The Ukrainian president, Petro Poroshenko, canceled the friendship treaty with Russia. After that, he has accepted surplus U.S. naval vessels to prop up a navy that exists in name only. This is all in response to Russia's completing the Kerch Strait Bridge, which Russia can use to block access through. The Kerch Strait is Russia's territory, and by international law, Russia can limit access to the Sea of Azov. So, this weekend's incident in which a tugboat was rammed, ships fired upon, and seized by Russia, ultimately was a proper and legal response to a clear provocation because the Ukrainian military ships refused to announce their intentions. Let's not beat around the bush here. This incident is meant to justify further antagonism between the West and Russia on the eve of the G20 and the planned meeting between President Trump and Putin, which, by the way, is going to happen this Monday. The G20 is on right now. That's why the stock market, in part, rose, plus the Fed saying they weren't going to increase rates, rose 600 points yesterday. It also was meant to inflame Ukrainian nationalism and drum up support for Poroshenko, who is trailing badly in the polls as we approach the March elections. Declaring martial law so as to potentially suspend those elections, the United States satrap is raising stakes on Russia to finally respond to these repeated provocations. At the same time, the Ukrainian army unleashed a heavy shelling of the Donbass contact line near a city in years. So you see, there's an entirely different, more scholarly and accurate portrayal of what goes on. But you won't see a single member of MSNBC, Atlantic, Mother Jones. No one is going to tell you the truth. And in this case, Amy Goodman was called out. So here is a question for you. I believe in freedom of speech. But what happens when that speech ends up supporting genocide? What happens when we find out that Libya represented not only no threat to anyone except terrorists, but also was the crown jewel of progressive idealism in Africa and was going to take African nations a step further in breaking their reliance upon Western countries and China, which can give them money and air bases, but doesn't help the average person. He was helping the average person. And now he's dead, and tens of thousands of innocent people were killed, and same in Syria. There was no, by the way, and you will never hear this on those clown idiot jerks over at CNN or MSNBC, but there were no, I repeat, there were no people shot upon innocent protesters by Syrian troops. There's absolutely irrefutable documentation, and we have presented this on five separate programs by reporters there and looking at the information. Those were infiltrators that the United States and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, Israel, and United Arab Emirates were all funding, supporting to destabilize the country so it could be taken over. And it would have been had it not been for Russia coming to their aid. So you see, almost everything the media gives us on important issues is lies, but also in the alternative media and certainly in the liberal media. And that's why I had Chris Hedges on yesterday. The liberal media today despises Chris Hedges, and yet who better than Chris Hedges to further true liberal values? Because these dancing clowns of the Clintons and everyone else that suck up to them, these idiots, they don't represent anything that should ever be considered liberal or progressive, because they're not. They're fascistic. And that also includes some programs on Pacifica. But that's their right. The difference is I would not recommend censoring any program, even if I disagree with it. But they sure as hell have no problem doing that. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. For those of you who did not have a chance yesterday to hear, or the night before, two nights before, to hear on the Progressive Commentary Hour, the challenge to liberal media and what has happened to it over the decades, where Chris Hedges spent 33 minutes, and then we had that was strictly upon its compromised, who in power has usurped it, and taken it off into different directions, and what this meant for the rest of the American public. But it was powerful. And then Nutrice Lee followed that, and then I finished up with a six-minute commentary of my own personal experiences. You can go to the archives and download it. Let me give you the number so you can listen to it. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And listen to the program for yourself. We're going now to my guest, Todd Miller, who is standing by. I gave you Todd's background, his complete bio at the beginning of the program. Nice to have you with us today, Todd.
Hey, it's great to be on. Thank you.
One condition no human being living will be able to escape, even if he or she is among the global elite, is the new earth that climate change is bringing forth. We are all, as will future generations now destined to live in, be affected by it, and it's getting worse. There's already warming that next year, 2019, will be the new hottest year on record. This was the hottest year on record thus far, the last 4 years, just as the previous 4 years have broken every record. Now, you've called this new environment we have entered the new human rights battlefield. I'd like you to show us what you mean, and even the liberal media, which accepts the scientific facts about climate change, emphasizes extreme weather conditions and storms, but puts it way off into the future. Even the New York Times yesterday was talking about, well, you know, if we do this by 2040, the world is not going to be the way it is in 2040 as it is now. We don't have this time. I've interviewed too many top climatologists and global warming experts to know that we have an unlimited amount of time to sit around and do nothing. So give us your perspective on this and how the climate changing will impact the people of North America and Europe and Africa and Asia and the South America. And what are we going to likely see happening? The forum is yours.
Well, I mean, I definitely could start with looking at what's been going on the U.S.-Mexico border, thinking about the caravans coming north from Central America, and looking at, you know, some of the things that have been happening in Central America around climate change and the, you know, especially for the past 10 years, but even this year, there was a big drought that in July and August of this year that put, I believe the estimates were at 2 million farmers or 2 million people in peril in possible hunger situations. So those 2 million people, and primarily in the countries of Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and a little bit of Nicaragua as well, suddenly, you know, subsistence farmers suddenly lost their harvest. Like in Honduras, 80% of their harvests were of corn and beans were lost. In El Salvador, they declared a red alert because of the drought. 77,000 corn farmers were in peril, and this sort of drought sort of situation. Been happening in what has been called the dry corridor of Central America for a while now, but particularly intensifying in the last 10 years. And climate scientists are showing this intensification and frequency of drought to be connected with the warming of the planet. So as you mentioned right off the bat, and you know in your introduction, it is happening now. People are being displaced now. I would imagine that. The people that arrived at Tijuana the other day and were tear gassed by the U.S. Border Patrol, among them were people who lost their harvests over the summer. So it's a very real frontline situation that's happening here and now. And so that's kind of the research that I've been doing. I've been connecting this sort of displacement due to climate change. And if you can look at the statistics, if you look at internal displacement monitoring center, says that already 22.5 million people per year are being displaced due to climate-related hazards. So I look at the displacement that's already happening, the impacts of climate that's already happening. If you take Central America again, one of the climate scientists that I've interviewed, he calls Central America the quote-unquote ground zero of climate change in the Americas, mainly because of these drought situations, but also because it's an isthmus and it has, you know, large bodies of water on either side, which has produced mega storms or super storms or hurricanes that have caused quite a lot of devastation as well. So the scientists are calling it a ground zero of climate change in the Americas. And so the situation of displacement is already happening. And then when you look at what happens when people arrive to the United States, as we've seen the last few days, we've had we built up our borders, we've militarized our borders, and I'm not just talking the Trump administration. I'm talking about a phenomenon that's gone back 25 years or even longer, 30 years, of a constant increase of budgets for border immigration enforcement, the building of walls in the 2006 to 2009 and the post-9/11 era, the hiring, the going from 4,000 to 21,000 Border Patrol agents. And then if you look at the documents around DHS and their DHS does look at the future of displacement of people, or probably the present, as you mentioned, as a way to say we have to bolster our borders even more because there's going to be more people on the move due to these climate catastrophes. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Appreciate the overview. It is my belief that most of the people coming from Central and South America are coming because they have no choice. Their own governments are utterly inept or corrupt, what money we do give, and we give hundreds of millions of dollars to Central and South American countries, as we know none of that filters down to the actual person who is suffering. It all is a kleptocracy. And when Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton co-presidents the tag team match were supporting Colombia, they gave enormous amount. And before them, George Bush Sr. gave enormous amounts for the war on drugs, but nothing about what happens when the climate changes and or people can no longer live because they're caught between FARC, the rebels on one side, and the militias and the army on the other side. And whole villages had been attacked and frequently wiped out. And this was not something new. This had gone clear back to Ronald Reagan. So there is a legacy of the United States, in particular, but not exclusively, but primarily, destabilizing any democratically elected government that chose not to do business with the United States and its major privatizing and corporate partners. And instead of being honest and showing the American public a full discussion with scholars, people are not ideologues, people are not political. They're just looking, here's the truth from our School of the Americas, where we train people how to go in and destroy unions and labor movements and reclaiming farms. And we destroyed all that so that the major banana companies and pineapple companies and tobacco company, whatever it was, would have an exclusive and all power there. We never thought, what about the consequences of people living? So now we're seeing the consequences. Hurricanes have devastated. Think of all the people who are coming because their homes were destroyed. Their crops now, you're telling us, are destroyed. The government is corrupt. MS-13 is kidnapping young girls and keeping them hostage, taking their passports and saying, you must cross the border illegally or we're going to kill your parents. This is not an idle threat. These people are nuts. They will do it. Why aren't we looking at the total picture and then sending 500 or 1,000 or 5,000 bureaucrats, they're worthless anyhow, but send those people down there at the border so they can properly and expediently get these people into the country, and those that are shown to be coming legitimately, then not just allow them in, but to help them get started. We could have a Marshall Plan to build an entire community where it's properly managed, where people can have a place to stay till they get on their feet, can master their trades, and then help get them jobs in a way that they're not going to be exploited by the farm and other industries for peanuts, and get them a place where they can begin to become a whole person again. Why can't we do that?
Yeah, that is the key question, I would say. Why can't we do that, right? You know, on our borders, we seem to only be able to increase the budgets for immigration enforcement, increase the amount of walls and fences and barriers that are put on the border, increase the amount of Border Patrol agents and their weapons and their ammunition, increase the number of like high-tech surveillance technologies. Like in Arizona, where I live, Elbit Systems, which is an Israeli company, just for the past 2 years have been building what are called integrated fixed towers, which they've used in the West Bank in Palestine, and now they've been translated to the U.S.-Mexico borderlands. The kind of apparatus of exclusion of not allowing, you know, the people who, as you mentioned, been displaced by U.S. policies going back many, 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 many years. You know, Guatemala, the 1954 coup, military coup that was instigated by the CIA because the United Fruit Company called for it. Those sorts of historical precedents that, or the historical events, have preceded what we are seeing today and are very much very relevant. You know, when you look at the economic models in Central America. Christian Parenti, the sociologist, calls looking at how climate is influencing or becoming increasingly impactful as the cat. He calls it the catastrophic convergence, where if you look at a place, you have to look at all the kind of crises that are happening, and this rings true for Central America. There's a political, economic, and increasingly ecological crises that are not separate. these sort of historical military dictatorships and the economic oligarchies that keep many, many people poor. So when the droughts hit or when the hurricanes hit, that's often the last straw. You have to move. You have to go to another place. And that's what you're seeing all over Central America. You see a lot of people going from the countryside to the cities, like in Honduras. People are going to San Pedro Sula or Tegucigalpa. And the low factory, the low wages in the factories, or if you can get a job at all, or if you get caught up in the volatile violence that is often happening in the cities, and you go to the north, that's how you end up, at this U.S.-Mexico border, even the Mexico-Guatemala border, which with U.S. pressure, Mexico has been building up and U.S. money, I should say, it has been building up its border with Guatemala. So it's increasingly difficult for somebody from Central America to come north. And when they do, and then when they cross a borderline and they're traveling unauthorized or undocumented, then they are criminalized and treated as such, treated as less than human. And that's what we've been seeing. The images that we've been seeing on the U.S.-Mexico border, are testament to that. So why, as you said, can't there be something else done? Why does it have to be a massive apparatus of exclusion? Why can't it be something completely different, where we do have the bureaucrats down there that are facilitating a process of asylum or facilitating a process of allowing people to come into our country, but yet it's the exact opposite that's happening?
Appreciate those thoughts, and let us end with this thought. What is happening primarily in Honduras is no surprise. This has been predicted for a long time, given the loss of arable land, food harvest, jobs, and adverse climate conditions being experienced in those countries. And Central America is being called the new dry corridor. Also, while there is outrage about Trump sending military troops to the U.S.-Mexican border, the U.S. military has been present of working with Border Patrol during Obama's administration and Clinton's administration, but there was never any public outrage about that. If Americans are unwilling to believe in the climate scientists and believe their warnings are a sham and conspiracy, perhaps they should listen to our own Defense Department. So if Trump denies climate change, which I don't believe intellectually he's capable of grasping, and he has done this for a long time, and he just wants to build a wall and nothing else, and believes the migrants are stealing our jobs and stampeding the nation with the illusion of that we're a drug addict country because of these people, it's just not true. We're a drug addicted country, and shouldn't we legalize drugs and stop the war on drugs and start putting in every community in America natural, non-toxic, and humanistic therapies to help people reclaim their health, and then look at all the death and suffering by the hundreds of thousands that wouldn't have happened in Mexico and Colombia and other countries? It's just that every opportunity to be better informed and more reasonable in our approaches, we have selected the wrong policymakers and opinion leaders to get us there. So we need a completely different mindset. Todd Miller, thank you for all your good work, and we look forward to another conversation.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Todd Miller, and Todd's is the author of a very important book called Storming the Wall, Climate Change, Migration, and Homeland Security. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.